call this meeting to order. It's a meeting of the Senate and House Transportation Committee. Let the record reflect that it's 1:09 p.m. on February 3rd, 2015. If I can please get us all together here. Let the record show we have a quorum to do business. Present are Senator Dunleavy, Senator Egan, myself, Chairman Michicki, and on the House side, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay, we have today, we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Nodiak, Representative Millett, myself, Representative Hughes, my co-chair, Representative Foster, and Representative Stutes, and Representative Klayman.
Thank you, and I don't see anybody in the audience. My committee staff behind me is Lynn Smith. And I'd also like to recognize other staff here from Senate Records, and Kreckelberg and LAO staff, Danaya Burns. I'd like to remind you all to please turn off your cell phones. The purpose of our meeting today is first an overview of the Alaska Railroad and an update on the Point McKenzie Railroad extension. We'll begin with the railroad. Mr. O'Leary is here, President and CEO of the Alaska Railroad. If you can come to the table, identify yourself for the record, and begin your presentation, please. Also online, we have Clark Hopp, Vice President of Engineering, and we may have Barbara Amy, the CFO for Alaska Railroad. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Railroad, and appreciate very much the opportunity to be here. Thank you. Today, I want to do an overview of the Alaska Railroad and just kind of talk a little bit about some of the hotter topics that we are facing. But first slide, or actually second slide here, is just almost what we call our obligatory quick facts page. And again, a little bit of history about the railroad, a little bit about current state of it. Of course, we are an independent corporation owned by the state of Alaska. We're a seven-person board appointed by the governor, and a little different organization in that our statutory mandate that we are mandated to be self-sustaining, so without necessarily direct support from the state in most particular situations. We our employees are not state employees. They are corporation employees. We have a different benefits program. We're not in PERS or SBS or anything else like that.
Mr. O'Leary, can I just cut in for a moment? I just want to note the arrival of my vice chair, Senator Bishop. Thank you, Senator.
We like to think of ourselves as a big deal. If you take a look at 656 miles of track stretching from Tidewater at Seward up to into the interior of Fairbanks and out to Eielson Air Force Base, you see the some of the statistics of some of the rolling stock we have. And we carry nearly half a million passengers and just shy of 5 million tons of freight. And we'll get into that a little bit later on here. Give or take on our financial statements, we're about $1.1 billion of assets on a historical cost basis, and give or take in the $140 to $145 million a year of revenues. We between 575 and 600 employees on a year-round basis. That swells up about another 100 to 125 during the summer season for us. They're about three-quarters of our employees are members of one of five unions. So really, from the railroad's perspective, we have really three legs to our financial underpinnings here. And the first and largest is freight. And I usually like to show this chart and then say it's one of the saddest charts I could ever show up here, in that it shows the relatively significant decline year over year here from the 2008 time frame. And if you were to actually go back further, really back to about the 2005 time frame, you would still see that trend continuing. This slide shows the different primary lines of business that we have, and doesn't necessarily equate entirely to their importance. All of our customers are important, but it just does show the tonnages here. The one that direct your attention to is the bottom portion, which is the dark blue or the royal blue there, which shows bulk petroleum products. And the significant drop in that tonnage moved, which is a direct result of the stepping down of the production at the North Pole refinery over the years, culminating in 2014 with its actually conversion from a refinery to a terminal type operation. We're our largest customer, and sort of tellingly in some ways even at that diminished level still are our largest customer. But you do see some of the other
question. Yes.
I was just going to ask how this is physical volume or weight. So how does that equate to revenue volume, this chart? Or maybe you have something that has that.
I don't think we break it out in this presentation by that, but and you know, not everything is, not all lines of revenue are created equal, certainly. Historically, our largest freight revenue source has been bulk petroleum products moved. And then followed by our what we call our interline business, which we'll talk a little bit more about later on. It's our rail barge services that we offer. So then petroleum to barge, and then normally now looking at, depending on the year, our coal hauls, we've called north and south from out of Healy, Alaska, and also then our gravel. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that matter. Gravel is a very heavy haul, but it's a very short haul coming from the Mat-Su Valley into Anchorage, whereas, you know, coal goes from Healy down all the way down to Seward. So, lots of different variables.
Here's your question.
Okay. Second leg of the financial trinity is our passenger service, and really the face of the Alaska Railroad, what most people know us for. And you know, it's give or take, depending on the year, somewhere in the 500,000 passenger range. And you see the recent history here, the significant impact caused by the recession in 2008, and also some of the cruise companies redeploying assets. A little bit of time after that, the drop down, and then the recovery beginning in the 2012-2013 time frame. Nice growth curve for, actually an important point is we have two, I don't like to use the term classes, but two different segments of riders on the Alaska Railroad. There are those that book directly with the Alaska Railroad or through our tour operators, and there are those them that are working with the cruise companies. And because one of the interesting aspects of the railroad's passenger service is we pull passenger coaches owned by the cruise companies. So there somebody comes in, takes a cruise ship into Whittier, will come out on a privately owned rail car that the Alaska Railroad is pulling. So that's sort of the differentiation there between ARR ridership and cruise line ridership out there. But nice growth curve for the railroad's passengers.
Mr. O'Leary, I have a question for you myself. It would be nice to see a pie chart of the proportion of revenue. And I don't have not had a chance to flip through this particular presentation, but freight versus passenger revenue.
Certainly. We can certainly do that. It's not in this presentation, just not having a pie chart, but again, $140 million of revenue annually. Freight runs right around the 95 to 100 range for that passenger, somewhere in the 26 to $27 million range.
Okay. Roughly 25%.
Yes.
Thank you.
And third and finally, but certainly as important, are the Alaska Railroad's real estate holdings. The railroad, of course, was built by the federal government and transferred, purchased by the state in 1985. And as well as the rolling stock and that came over and the track bed, 36,000 acres of land were also transferred from federal ownership to the corporation in 1985. Roughly half of that 36,000 acres is used in the operation of the railroad itself. The other half is available for lease or permit use by different private sector or governmental entities, and again, primarily for economic development type activities. Real estate revenue, so we do make significant returns off of the lease property or the permit properties. We also own docks and in Seward and in Whittier at this point, and it's you know, kind of a key piece of the whole logistics puzzle for us also. Can't say enough about the importance of real estate for the Alaska Railroad. As the vagaries of the business cycle hits on freight and passenger, real estate has a tendency to act as a buffer for that. It's a very consistent, not spectacular, but very consistent revenue stream for the Alaska Railroad and feeds a significant portion of our capital program. All the railroad's, you know, net income, which we'll talk about here in a moment, is, you know, transferred back into the infrastructure. We reinvest it in the plant to keep the capital-intensive infrastructure healthy. By virtue of the passenger service, year-round scheduled passenger service that we provide, we are eligible for Federal Transit Administration formula monies. And these monies are significant, at one point reaching nearly $36 million per year. In the last reauthorization of the federal highway or the federal transportation reauthorization, there were some in Congress who, for one reason or another, didn't necessarily understand or believe that the Alaska Railroad met the definition of a of an eligible carrier, which is, they're incorrect, but. And as a result, it took some intervention from our congressional delegation, and unfortunately kind of a compromise was struck, but it did end up costing us about 20% reduction all in of those federal monies that we received. They basically cut the federal funds and also doubled our match requirement. So pretty significant for us. And if you enjoyed that, don't worry, it's back up again in 2015. So we'll have doubtlessly the same opportunity to educate those in Congress, certainly not our congressional delegation. They've been extraordinarily supportive. So the railroad of late has been in a near constant state of financial flux. Really, with the step down of the production at the refinery, which really began in the 2006-2007 time frame, the railroad was forced to make some significant, or forced, but had to make some significant cost reductions to deal with the drop in some of those key revenue streams. So as a result of that, beginning in 2008 and two other times, a total of three times altogether, we went through a very significant belt tightening, which at the end of the day, you know, equated to roughly 300 positions. And again, you saw that, you know, we're down to about 575 right now, so a very significant number of positions out there, and other attendant cuts to non-personnel type activities. And the standard, I mean, wage freezes, we've redone our benefit program, we've done, you know, gone through a very significant restructuring. It also included changes in operations to, you know, still provide the customer service we need to for our freight and passenger customers, but trying to do it in a less costly manner. The goal really was that the railroad would look and feel the same from the outside, but would be operating differently internally.
Mr. O'Leary, Representative Nagyak has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the downturns in the largest freight lines, is that the clients or you have, or those of people you work with moving freight for them, or?
Through the chair, Representative, yes, it is. It primarily related to the petroleum haul. Related to the refinery changes outside of Fairbanks, and then also a significant drop in our export coal line of business. A couple slides back, take a look at you know, export coal, which is that green column up there, and you see that You know, 2014, we moved about 500,000 metric tons compared to, you know, nearly 1.2 million metric tons in the 2011 time frame. And so a pretty significant drop for us.
Thank you.
Representative Hughes?
I just want to say that cutting 300 positions and leaving, what was it,
575, 600?
You might have some lessons for us as we look at what we're facing. But I also, back on the previous slide, I have a question. The middle bullet regarding the federal budget, it said the cut was only to the Alaska Railroad and did not reduce the federal budget. So it would clarify this if I'm wrong, but that meant that the total amount that railroads were getting, they didn't decrease that line item, but Alaska got less. And if that is true, where did they move the money? And I see the next one, the cut was ill will towards Senator Stevens' legacy. So was it another state that benefited, or did they spread what they didn't give us to multiple states? Do you know?
No, it was not, given by reducing the Alaska Railroad, it did not necessarily go to other similar type, passenger entities. It just, and that was sort of the odd part about this whole thing, in that it wasn't like, well, if we reduce the Alaska Railroad, you know, others will get more. It just went somewhere else, but it did not, it wasn't necessarily cutting the pie up differently going to the other transit operators.
Okay, thank you.
I also want to recognize Representative Keto, who's entered the room. Thank you, Representative.
Slide 8 is one measure that we watch closely, certainly, of our financial health. The Alaska Railroad is set up and organized to look very much like private enterprise from our financial reporting perspective. So we do have a measure of net income, our operating revenues, and take away the operating expenses here. And you see sort of a history of where we have been. We had a much stronger 2014 than was initially anticipated, and especially given the news almost a year ago to the day about the change or the closure of the refinery outside of North Pole. But a lot of the slack, for lack of a better term, was picked up on by our interline business in 2014, which was directly a result of the increased exploration and development activity on the North Slope. So the other good news was we had a very strong passenger season, and we also had a very, for us, easy winter on both sides. You know, really not nasty snow, not the bitter cold that we've experienced in some previous years. Plus the fact, really, the ability of these, or the cost structure changes that we've made have really taken effect, so that when revenue does come in, we're well prepared to capitalize on that.
Question for you, Mr. O'Leary. What percentage is fuel cost today versus a year ago for the Alaska Railroad, just in sort of generalities, operating cost?
Sure. Thinking about that, we're somewhere, I would say it's, my guess right now would be in the 12% range of total operating expenses, but I certainly could verify that. There's no doubt we have benefited from the drop in diesel cost that we've experienced. The only thing about that, like other transportation providers, we have a fuel surcharge program that is in place to, in an attempt, even though it doesn't match up perfectly, to preserve margins on different lines of business. So while our diesel expense drops, our fuel surcharge revenue also drops. So it, again, it's not perfect, but it, all in, it's one of the very few benefits that I can see to lower oil prices, yes.
Okay. And I want to represent Representative Culver, who has entered the room as well, back there. Yes, ma'am.
Follow up on your question through the chair. So it's approximately 12% of the cost currently?
Of our operating expenses would be, my
Approximate.
A guesstimate at this point.
And so a year ago, it was approximately what
percentage? It would be higher. I would certainly be higher in the, my guess would be probably closer to the 14 to 15% range.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Clayman has a question.
Just a follow-up on the same line. So of the, looks like about $0.8 million difference in your net income, how much of that can you attribute just to the drop in fuel, cost of fuel?
I would say not a significant portion, Representative Clayman, in that I think there's, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in those numbers with some just big swings in some sort of key revenue items there. And again, the difference in a lot of ways of just the amount of expense we incurred for the winter versus the, you know, the difference in the winters between the years. But, you know, there could be up to $500,000 would be my estimate at this point.
In terms of fuel savings?
Correct.
Just in 2014 or coming into the new year?
I think between 13 and 14, there was a relatively significant drop. And, you know, we started seeing the lower fuel prices certainly in the last half of the year, but certainly the last quarter of the year.
So roughly $500,000 saved in?
Would be a very wild guess at this point.
Continue, please.
Okay. One of the things that the Alaska Railroad has been involved with, certainly over the last number of years, has been some of the larger, some very large projects involving rail. And one that we're actually quite proud of is the Northern Rail Extension and the first phase of that particular project, which is a 3,300-foot bridge over the Tanana River outside of Salcha, Alaska, which provides year-round access currently to the military into some of their training grounds. This mega project, $188 million project, was funded primarily from the Department of Defense, but also with $84 million from the state. Recognizing the importance of this extension, this importance of this project to the military. And if the project was completed on time and under budget, actually, and something we're quite proud of, we have the ability to return somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1.2 million from the state funds back to the general fund. This, as I mentioned, was phase one of the Northern Rail Extension, which would extend from our current terminus in the Eielson Air Force Base area down eventually to the Delta Junction area. At this point, no funding has been identified for phases two through four, and it's very difficult with the military budgets as they are currently, and we all know about the state's capabilities currently.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, the $1.2 million returned to the general fund, that was project money left, capital money left that was returned, or is that something on an annual basis? That,
oh, no.
I figured it was
capital
not.
Money.
Yeah,
capital
okay.
Money. Let me be clear. Capital money, yes. Okay. Another very significant project, a rail extension project, I'm just going to touch on here because it's really the topic of the next presentation following me from our friends at the Matsu Borough here, about the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. And this is a Matsu Borough project that the Alaska Railroad is operating as sort of the program manager or the project manager for them on this, and it's progressing along nicely, but I'll leave it at that and let the next presentation address those issues, if that's all right. Which brings us then to one of certainly the hottest topics that the Alaska Railroad is facing currently. And I apologize to those who had to endure this yesterday in Senate Finance, but positive train control. Positive train control is what I refer to as the mother of all unfunded federal mandates. It came about in 2008 as a result of some, frankly, horrific train accidents that occurred. And it's a safety overlay that is designed to eliminate or greatly reduce human error accidents for train operations. It has a deadline of December 31st of 2015 that absolutely no railroad in the country is going to meet, the Alaska Railroad included. And we are, but there has yet to date been no extension granted from the Congress at this point. Now, expectations are that that will occur, but it has not to this particular point. It's a roughly $160 million project, so it's greater than 1 year's worth of our revenues in general. And the railroad had a got an earlier start than most on this, in that we received some earmark funds from Senator Stevens and some other funds to use this as a sort of a demonstration project. Got an earlier start on this particular project before it was mandated. Proceeding along to you know complete the project, when some of these financial issues that I talked about earlier, meaning the drop-off in commercial activity and the significant haircut to our federal monies, came about. And as a result of that, it became clear to us that we, the Alaska Railroad, were not going to be able to finish this project on our own. And as a result, we, as provided for in statute, we came down to the state legislature and to the administration and laid out our case for this project, and we can talk a little bit in a moment here about what happens if we don't complete this project. And the legislature was very responsive, and over the past 2 years gave us a total of $34 million to keep this project moving. So the railroad has roughly $70 million of its own funds into this project. There's roughly $34 million of state money into it, with $55 million remaining to complete the project.
Can we, let's just do a quick at ease, please. Back on the record. Continue, please.
Okay. Slide 12 gives a brief overview of what is PTC, and as I mentioned, it's a safety overlay designed it's a research and development project that is designed to take the human factor errors out of it. You see the four major areas it is designed to address there, and but all that can be explained really by human error factors. One of my favorite slides out here, just the title alone, No Way Out. We have looked, we have searched, we have done what we can, and we do not believe that there is any particular way that the Alaska Railroad is not subject to this particular mandate, nor is there any way for us to get out of it. We have been in near constant contact with our congressional delegation about this. We have had the Alaska Attorney General review this in the past. The Association of American Railroads, other trade groups have looked at it, and we just do not know of any way for us, or there is no way for us to get out of this project. It continues to be on the National Transit Safety Board's most wanted list. It's a safety project, and it's just there is not an appetite at this point in Congress, it appears, to want to make that change.
I have a question for you, Mr. O'Leary. I've asked you this in different ways, but although it's the NTSB's most wanted, if you had $160 million to spend on a railroad that you know better than anyone else on the planet, would you spend it on positive train control?
No, sir, I would not.
Could you give me some examples of what would be a better investment for the Alaska Railroad on ensuring the safety of the public?
I think it's very similar to other railroads have said other things here, that this particular project takes away from just the basics that you need to be able to invest in railroads to keep and maintain a safe transportation system. So rail, ties, ballast, bridges especially are things that require, you know, like all other infrastructure, are aging and need continual upkeep and significant amounts of money for upkeep. So that was where, if it were my choice, is what I would put the money in. So,
Mr. O'Leary, how many times have you been to the legislature other than for PTC in the last 5 years requesting funding?
The only other, I believe, time that the Alaska Railroad has been down requesting funding was to in support of the Northern Rail extension, that bridge to support the military, that other than PTC that I can remember, sir.
So I would say that PTC, although it looks like capital, it really is operating, considering the requirement, federal requirement.
No, sir. It is really a capital project to just, you know, develop this system and implement this system. Upon implementation, we anticipate $5 to $7 million per year of increased, I call it, care and feeding that the railroad will have to maintain this system appropriately. But that's always been something that we said would be on the Alaska Railroad's account. We would not be coming back to the legislature for.
So I guess to put that in a different light, the other requests you've made have been for capital specifically to improve service of the Alaska Railroad. This is the first request that's due to a federal requirement that is simply outside of what the railroad can generally afford. You've not come in for operating requests in the past, and really this capital, in my view, translates to operating because you simply don't have the choice.
You're correct. We have not come in for operating and in the past or capital.
Representative Nagyak.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. About expansion to those markets, to those resources that we can send to market. I mean, you know, that work with the federal government to convince them there, you know, there's a need for more transportation, especially in rural Alaska, to those resources, that may create revenue not only for the state but for the railroad.
To the chair, representative, we believe that you know, the railroad is a key piece of infrastructure for this state, and you know, the ability to reach into different areas and expansion of the railroad would be a very good thing. We like to talk about you know, the concept of corridors to resources more than roads to resources, just for the simple idea of building something to the geometry of a railroad. Can be, you know, you can add roads later to something like that. We think the idea of, for lack of a better term, island railroads in small areas that don't necessarily immediately connect to our main line could make good business sense. We certainly are willing to work with anybody to help, you know, help them develop the business case for that because, you know, we're really good at our particular niche of, you know, heavy materials, long haul.
Thank you.
You bet. Co-chair?
Thank you. Back to the positive train control and the $160 million that you would choose to spend otherwise. Is it correct to assume that the positive train control is really designed for high traffic areas like New York City, Washington, D.C., L.A., and really doesn't make sense for Alaska? And then also, in addition to that, that $5 to $7 million care and feeding, how do you plan to absorb that? Are you going to raise rates?
Representative Hughes, you know, one thing I do want to make sure that we don't leave any an incorrect impression is, you know, we will get the Alaska Railroad and other railroads will get some benefit out of positive train control. I mean, it will make us safer. It will provide some benefit. Now, that said, if I, again, coming back to, if I had $160 million to spend, would that be where I would direct the funding? No. So as a result of that, it's difficult to, again, have this as, but regardless, it's a mandate. and we are going to comply with it to the best of our abilities. How we take care of the $5 to $7 million of again care and feeding cost going is yet to be determined. We're right now working to the concept of getting the capital funded on this thing and being done with the project through by 2018. At that particular point, yeah, we'll be looking at all sorts of different ways.
Thank you. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. O'Leary, how many times has the railroad applied for a waiver and been denied?
For positive train control?
Right.
I couldn't tell you exactly what we have,
if there's been
any
application,
but we have certainly worked with both the regulatory agencies and our congressional delegation about what opportunities there may have been for us to be either exempted or a waiver or it not be as, you know, applied to us in the same way, and a number of times, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said that there will be benefits safety-wise and otherwise. What are the otherwise benefits to the railroad?
Through the chair, Representative, one of the things, we're replacing our dispatch system as a part of that, and it's going to be, we're still working through the bugs on that, but it'll be a more efficient dispatch system that was, it was a required upgrade to be able to put PTC, make PTC effective for us. So as we've gone along in this process, there will be some benefits like that. There have been some signal work that will end up being, making us, you know, slightly more efficient. Again, so it's not correct to say that we're not going to get any benefit out of this thing. It's just that, and the regulators all understand that. They understand that the cost to benefit ratio on this particular initiative is not, it doesn't provide a classic return on investment.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay.
Okay, continuing along here, this is the what if the railroad does not comply with the mandate slide, and I will leave, you know, let you take a look at the first four bullets, which talk about the different fines and civil and criminal penalties that can be assessed on not only the corporation but also on the on individuals for noncompliance, especially if it's considered willful noncompliance. But I'll bring you down to the fifth bullet on there. The eventually, or perhaps quickly, we would get to the stage that the regulators would prohibit our passenger service. And I'm going to go quickly through these next couple of slides, but, you know, the passenger service is obviously a very big deal, not only to the Alaska Railroad, but to the state of Alaska in general, in that it is, provides, you know, a significant number of jobs. It provides a significant amount of spending, and we knew that as what it did for the railroad. In a little over a year ago, we commissioned a study from an economics firm here, which I'm sure you're familiar with, McDowell Group, to take a look at the impact to the state as a whole if passenger service was discontinued. And again, I'm not going to read you what's on the slide there, but you know, you're looking at 2,000 jobs, give or take, and this was in 2012's numbers, and also you know, significant spending. And the most telling thing to me, honestly, is that last bullet on this page, where assuming you've got the same number of people coming, you're going to put 3,700 additional motor coach trips on what I would already say are some very crowded highways between the parks and especially the Seward Highway, probably Alaska's most dangerous highway, or certainly most scenic, but also not sure that the state is ready to address that particular issue of the amount of increased motor coach there. So takeaways from these slides are the loss of passenger service, if forced into that by the lack of progress on PTC, would have significant and ongoing impacts.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of all the railroads that are mandated to have this PC or PTC update, how many of them will have it completed by 2015?
To the best of my knowledge, none. There's some talk out there that maybe one out of California, but I don't think it's going to happen.
In your follow-up?
Certainly.
In your estimation, how many of them will have it done by 2018?
It's a great answer, but more? I couldn't tell you. But the trade organizations and most railroads have been pushing for a 3-year, some as far as 5 years. The current thinking is perhaps more of a 3-year extension would be sufficient. And a lot of the issue with PTC is there's a limited number of contractors out there that can actually do this work. And so it's very difficult to get them to, and it's a research and development project. So, but we're hoping for 2018. We're already planning for 2018, to be very clear, in our financial plans.
Thank you, Mr.
Just
Chair.
Just wondering if since there's such a small number of contractors, if they had the same lobbyist in D.C. Representative Clayman.
Following up on Representative Stute's question, is the extension one that the executive branch in Washington could provide, or does it actually have to require an act of Congress to get that 3-year extension?
Through the chair, it is an act of Congress that's required.
Okay.
Sometimes when I give the PTC presentation and some of the other talk, it's just like, is there a black cloud falling over my head here? All right. So it is not all the end of the world for the Alaska Railroad. We have opportunities out there. We have developed recently put the finishing touches on our strategic plan going forward here. And among there's things in there about capital, there's things in there about cost control, there's things in there about being a good neighbor. But the first one out there is how are we going to grow our way out of this particular situation we find ourselves in? So when we use the term here, top line opportunities, how can we increase our revenue base and support the state in economic development? So we think, there are opportunities out there, and we'll talk about a couple of them here, on not only our rail barge service, which we'll talk about here in a moment, to support oil field activities. The concept of a pipeline on rails here, whether moving LNG or refined oil products again. We think Seward has a significant opportunity for growth. We think the concept of additional ports over in Port McKenzie and Seward are just two areas that could provide significant growth for the railroad. And as I talked about earlier, the corridors to resources discussion. One thing that I just want to touch on briefly on slide 18 is our barge service, and that's one of the better-kept secrets in some places here. We partner with a couple of different organizations, one being Linden and the other being the Canadian National Railroad, to provide weekly barge service from the Seattle and Prince Rupert area, and these are rail barges. So effectively, somebody can order a load of pipe down from Houston, or as the case may be, from Florida, and it can be railed up on the other, other railroad systems up to Seattle, where it rolls onto a rail barge, where we can take 50 rail cars, and you see the picture there of it, and then takes off, get brought up to Whittier, rolls right off onto our system, and then can be taken up to Fairbanks. Can either be taken to Anchorage or Fairbanks, and then, as is often the case for oil field supplies, transloaded in Fairbanks onto trucks and brought up to the North Slope. But we are the proud owners of the longest rail haul in North America, pushing almost 5,000 miles when that load of pipe starts down in Panama City, Florida.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your previous slide, you were referring to the taking oil on rails. So I assume we're not talking about taking out taps. We're going to bring oil from some other place. Has there been any discussion with the Canadians on their interest in railroading oil north and delivering it into taps?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we had some discussion on that last year, and I think the year before, and I can't remember the name, if it was G7G or a couple of other entities that were interested in exploring that, and we certainly worked with them, talked to them about it, but have not heard anything from them. It's probably been the greater part of a year.
Could you, as a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, Could you explain to me what the pipeline and rails, the crude oil and refined oil, what you're talking about there, and when do you expect that to be able to take place? Because of the buzzwords on top of intermodal, they normally throw that out there to razzle and dazzle us.
Future Senator, the crude oil is put up there just, LNG we'll talk about here in a moment, the crude oil is put up there just as something, it can be done. Not saying that there's any plans out there to do that. The refined oil is something that we certainly have been doing for years, coming from the North Pole refinery, bringing it down to Anchorage for, you know, to feed the cargo carriers and other carriers at Anchorage International, and we certainly hope that, that could, you know, possibly come back. But at this point, we are bringing refined product from south to north currently, as opposed to the way we did it for years.
Good.
Okay. And just, you know, just as a quick comment, it'd be nice sometime to maybe get back to the chairman on the status of the railroad dealing with some of your clients, dealing with the airport and some of your refineries, and along with your cash flow positions and a few things, and that might become a later date or what have you. But it'd be nice, I think, for us to get updated on that. I know there's some challenges a couple of years ago with the railroad and dropping volumes, and there was some concern on the longevity of it and how we're going to keep keep a viable railroad.
Through the chair, certainly, Senator, we could we'd be delighted to provide whatever the committee would think would be useful. I do remember a couple of years ago, and I think it was Senate Finance, we certainly provided some information to you about that, and we can relook at that and give you an updated version of that, if that would.
Certainly. Fair question. Thank you, Senator Stedman. Other questions? Continue, please. Oh, yes.
I guess it kind of piggybacks onto that, because in another committee hearing, there was a presentation about some folks that are floating around the idea of barging up LPG, liquefied petroleum gas, which is in this case propane, barging it up from Prince Rupert to Valdez and then by train on up to Fairbanks. Have they had conversations with you?
Representative Hughes, we have actually very little bit of rail down in Valdez, but nothing that connects. If they brought it up to Whittier or Seward, that could probably work out. We've been in contact with a lot of different people about a lot of different things, about, you know, moving such, you know, energy to primarily to the interior. So, you know, we've talked to a lot of folks.
So I just take it that the primary objective of this slide is there are a lot of other opportunities that you continue to investigate. I mean, what the Alaska Railroad looks like today could be very different from service that's provided 10 or 15 or 20 years from now.
I think that's very accurate.
Would you say that you're forward-looking on encouraging increasing those kinds of business opportunities?
Senator, we have no choice but to be very bullish and looking forward to what we can do and how we can support, you know, some of these things that are going to be, quite frankly, good for the state and good for the Alaska Railroad at the same time here. So, yeah, I mean, each one of those, we're very open, and we definitely have the capacity and very much looking for business.
I have another question. So you say corridors to resources. Is it it's kind of a chicken and the egg question. Does a pre-existing road reduce the cost of construction, or does a pre-existing railway reduce the cost of road construction? Which works best? I mean, I would assume that most of the West was settled by rail first.
Senator, I think that's probably true. I mean, I have to get with my numerous friends at DOT to confirm something like that. But it's just, you know, again, we just think that the idea when you're looking at expansion, looking at, you know, going into rural areas or other areas for resource development, that we should like to be part of the conversation about what the best form of access and what the best form of transportation logistics may make the most sense.
Other questions? Continue, please.
Okay, so to kind of finishing it up here a little bit, but one of the areas that certainly gotten a little more attention of late is the concept of moving LNG to the interior. And this is a topic that we have been actually in discussions or been studying for about the last 18 months to 2 years, talked with a lot of different potential shippers out there. We always offered our services as the concept of an interim solution, energy solution for the interior until the larger gas line is built. We certainly already provide 5-day-a-week service, year-round service between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and you know, there's some equipment challenges certainly out there, but those could be overcome. The concept of moving liquefied natural gas on the railroad has a couple of things that, you know, conditions that need to be met. The first one is the approval from our federal regulators. We met with those regulators in the December timeframe, got a very clear picture of what it takes to gain that approval, and actually later this week we'll be submitting our application to have that approval for moving LNG on ISO tanks, on rail, on flat cars. And it, which brings you then to this next slide, which shows a little bit about what an ISO tank is. And they're just large cryogenic tanks, about 40 feet long, that could be two of them put on a rail car and certainly moved from different locations, be it Port Mackenzie or some other point out there. But we think it's, again, as we said, we have the capacity, and it could be a good interim solution for examination going forward.
Mr. O'Leary, you put it in your presentation, so I've got a comment. Again, what you're saying is what you do is move stuff. You're not talking about the entire value chain. You're not talking about whether or not you support this project. You're saying if someone gives you something to move, you'll move it. Is that correct?
Oh, I think that's very correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I think it's early to judge on the ADA project, which there are so many moving pieces that have to make sense in that product line. But one thing that we should say is that the energy content in a pound of LNG is about two-thirds of that of crude oil. So it's not an efficient way to move energy unless you have no other choice. But I hear what you're saying. You can move it if it's presented. It's certainly a solution. Whether it's a viable solution or an economic solution is yet to be weighed. Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to follow up with Senator Marchicki's line of reasoning in your response. You'll move it for a price. Because I just want to make sure everybody knows that. You're not moving it for free.
No, absolutely. Okay. I mean, just, you know, the model of the Alaska Railroad is that, you know, to support ourselves, to support that infrastructure. You bet.
Not a trick question or nothing. Nope. I just want to make sure that everybody knows it. It's got to be in the...
Appreciate that.
And I'd also like to follow up that we'd like to see you moving a whole bunch more stuff tomorrow than you're moving today. We're very supportive of your mission. Just carefully evaluating the options on this particular project. Great. Continue.
Okay. The last, I think, two slides here is just to make the committee aware that there is a state rail plan, which is a document that actually the Department of Transportation is in charge of, and it's something that is a prerequisite for us to continue to receive federal monies going forward. This is something that has kind of fallen off the radar in past years and has been resurrected about three or four years ago, too. And this document will be hopefully coming out soon. It's sort of a planning and vision document about the different railroads, operating railroads in Alaska, of course, the Alaska Railroad and the White Pass and Yukon. And sort of the big finish slide here, just talking about the future here. It's, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning here, it's sort of self-serving, but, you know, we're a big deal. We're a key piece of the infrastructure in a state that is really light on infrastructure. And as a result of that, we're important. We want to be there to help the state in its mission for economic development. I mean, that's a key piece of our mission statement. And the railroad needs to be strong. both financially, externally, to be able to do that. And we also have a number of initiatives internally. It's been a very difficult time for the Alaska Railroad over the past 5 years with, again, you take 300 positions out of an organization our size, morale has to suffer. So we're working diligently, to try to improve, shore that up internally, while at the same time remaining a strong, viable operation for the state and its citizens. And I once again appreciate very much the opportunity to come down here and talk with you about this. And thank you.
Questions?
Comment?
Yes. Senator Bishop.
Mr. O'Leary, I just wanted to go back to slide 8 because you had made a comment, and I didn't know if everyone picked up on it, but I certainly did. And on slide 8, you show your revenues in 2007 was $16.3 million, and this year was $15.1 million in 2014. And you kind of, with the refinery going down, you kind of had some expected revenue that you didn't really account for, and that was the uptick in drill casing chemicals and drill and mud and associated oil field supplies going to Prudhoe Bay. Am I correct?
You're very correct, sir.
Thank you.
That's a good comment, Senator Bishop. I have a question of my own. So although I'd like to see you increase your freight, your number one customer was Bulk Petroleum, remains your number one customer. If we are able to provide, so one of the things that we're focused on is a lower cost of energy for folks in the interior, a reliable quantity. If we were able to bring down the cost and increase, put the refinery back into business, would that positively affect your bottom line if they were going to go back into full production because we brought down their operating cost?
Senator, there's probably a number of different aspects of why that refinery is in this, or that asset is in the situation it's in right now, but certainly energy cost, as we understand it, is a key piece of that. So my expectation is yes, that would be very true.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Hughes. Just as we're closing back and some of us are thinking back to some of the previous slides, back to the positive train control, there are 55 more million more is needed. So I was wondering, maybe you touched on this, but if you could just remind us what your plan is as far as where that $55 million is going to come from. Are you asking the legislature for some of those funds this year?
Representative Hughes, thank you. It's a great question. I'm shocked I didn't remember to address this going earlier. The original plan was for us to ask for $55 million from the legislature over the next 3 years. Realizing that that would be a very difficult lift at this particular point, we've gone back and back to the drawing board and come up with what we think is a hopefully creative solution that can work through this. We have the ability to refinance existing debt that we issued in the 2006-2007 timeframe. It's finally reached a stage where it's economically feasible to refinance that. We want to take the savings that we'll make off of that refinancing and extend the maturity of those bonds, going from 2021 maturity date to 2025. And what that would permit us to do is max out the amount that we could borrow, or which would be an additional $37 million. So we would have $37 million of railroad debt, and then what we would need is then $18 million, one $18 million infusion, as opposed to the $55 million, which was, the initial thinking on that. 37 of railroad debt, 18 of general fund or state money, for lack of a better term, and we can take the financial package to the debt markets, sell the bonds, and fund positive train control. Now, it does have impacts for the Alaska Railroad, because what that does is it takes those funds away from us, from our ability to continue to invest in our basic infrastructure. But we realize, PTC is what's facing us right here. We realize the situation the state's in, and we want to try to bring a solution to the table. And it kind of also keeps that whole two-thirds, one-third, two-thirds of it being paid by the railroad, one-third by the state split.
Follow up?
Certainly.
And that one-time $18 million infusion, is that needed this year, or could it be phased over 3 years?
Representative Hughes, it would be our goal to have it this year, so again, we can take that package to the financial markets and to our grantor agency and say, we've got it. We need $55 million to finish this. Here's our $55 million. Similar, you can't go to the bank and say, hey, I want to get a loan that'll give me a total of three-quarters of the cost of this house, and I'll figure out the rest of it somewhere else. We think it's important to be able to come with the financial package intact.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. We're all very proud of our blue and gold trains. I know most of us use them. My new district now has some track, as you know. I'm frustrated on the one-size-fits-all approach for positive train control. I know you are as well. It does deliver some risk reduction, but what my fear is that it's a displacement of risk. It shifts risk from train control to deferment on some lines across the country for folks that simply can't afford it. They're going to defer maintenance in some way and introduce a new segment of risk that wasn't there before. So I'm frustrated with that. I appreciate your creativity on trying to meet the funding requirements, and we'll see how the legislature reacts to that. But I understand your predicament, and certainly wish you the best, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you all.
With that, next up, we have Mr. John Moosey, Matsu Borough Manager, and Joe Perkins, Project Director, giving us an update on the Port McKenzie Railroad Extension. Gentlemen, if you can please introduce yourselves for the record when you have an opportunity to approach the table. Let's take a brief at ease, please.
Okay, we're back on. If you can please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is John Moosey, and I'm the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Manager. And to my right is Joe Perkins, our Port McKenzie Rail Extension Project Manager and also former DOT Commissioner. Today, what we like to do is I'd like to explain the activity happened at Port McKenzie over this past year, and then Joe is going to talk in details about our rail project construction. In the past, presentations by the borough or myself, we've always talked about if we can do this, these will lead to possibilities. Today, we are now looking at opportunities because we are two-thirds of our way into this project, and we have business and business opportunities looking at this as a viable real project, and are starting to approach us and starting to make investments. I apologize. We had some great video we're not going to be able to show you. We have some stills here. But this this slide right here was taken in November 2012. It's during an ice time, and this is our first direct scrap metal ship that went directly from Alaska to Asia. The shipping time was reduced by 10 days, reducing the transportation cost. And we're able to do this because we're in the right location. One thing you cannot see because the video is not there is the ice kind of swirls, and with the inlet going up and down, contrary to some belief, the port is able to be operated during the winter months through the ice conditions.
I already have a question, sir, Mr.
That's
Mayor.
Okay, you bet.
You said it would reduce the shipping time by 10 days. What are we cutting out? What other route would it be going where we're reducing it by 10 days?
Essentially, in the past, we have shipped down to Seattle and then Seattle over to Asia. But this was our first direct shipment to Asia. And that is really our big opportunity. You know, we're hanging so far out there. We have an advantage over the lower 48 on all our shipping opportunities from Alaska and Port McKenzie.
And follow up, and that's because of the type of the ship that you can bring into the port that you have the ability to go straight to Asia?
I don't believe it's the ship type that's required. It's just now we're able to provide those services. The infrastructure is now in place to be able to start doing that. This next slide, and this is important, you'll see the outline of Port McKenzie. We have 14 square miles, 9,000 acres of industrial business space that is unencumbered by anything else. It's controlled practically and almost entirely by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. And there is some property there that's owned by the university as well, who's cooperating with us on the project. You can see we're just slightly 2 miles away from the port of Anchorage on the Kinnick Arm.
The Port McKenzie town site, is that, can we see that on this map, or is that outside?
No, you can't.
Where would it be in relation?
If you look on the screen where it says large, that's where it'd be where large is. The word large.
Yeah, right there.
Not on the map.
I got you.
Oh, it's not on the map?
Oh, large.
It is. Here. Yeah, we've got it.
Yeah, the yellow.
Yes. It's up. Yeah.
Yeah. That looks really large.
Yeah. And as far as we're at 45 feet low mean tide at the port, so we have plenty of deep water for any type of ship that needs to access. With a barge staging area, at right of dock, we have unencumbered 14 acres for temporary storage of materials, and we'll kind of see some of that a little bit later on in the presentation. But we have ample opportunities for lease lots for large projects, for assembling any type of gas line. Northern Economic Study that we had done recently estimated that the Port Mackerel location could save over $100 million in transportation savings for a large in-state gas line project, just because of our proximity closer to the project site. Activity of the port, and I wish I really had this video, This summer, we've unloaded 16 lineal miles of concrete-coated pipe at Port McKenzie. This summer, it will be loaded on support vessels on a working barge. It'll be welded together for underwater pipeline to connect Fury's new gas, to connect their new gas oil platform to Nikiski. So we already have projects working on. There's an incredible thing. It was done quickly, and we're able to do it internally with our partners. We have worked real hard to make sure our port operation has very little overhead. I have two full-time people operating this, and then when we need projects, we are partnering with local business to provide those infrastructure and logistic services for us. We are bulk resources. We have exported gravel, timber. We've brought in cement. We brought in fuel modules and that sort of thing for construction industry. And that's one point I like to make. We are bulk resource and project commodities port. We don't compete with anyone. We think we are complementary. And we are a different kind of port. They're looking for heavy industrial type of activities for really getting goods and services to the interior and from the interior. For the past 9 months, I've been working with a company, Westpac Midstream. This is an LNG company. It's looking at two phases. First phase is going to be 160 million LNG plant facility. Second phase will be another 460 million. First phase is pretty interesting because they're going to use our existing port, and their goal and market is to bring LNG to the interior, to the Fairbanks area. Mr. O'Leary talked about the ISO containers. They'll be using the ISO containers for this project on the rail. Fits very nicely on the rail. And one thing that this project does is the ISO containers serve for delivery, but they also serve as storage when they're dropped off. This will add quite a bit of traffic to the Alaska Rail and help drive down costs. We'll talk about the next project that you are all kind of concerned with, but this is a different project than the FNG that you've been hearing in the news recently. Yes.
I just want to know, where is Westpac now as far as, in relation to the deciding point where they would proceed and move forward? What's the status right now?
We are in lease negotiations with them right now. If things fall as they would like, they would be under construction this summer for the first project, which is $160 million. Right now, we'll kind of go into it. From my understanding, the current FNG site supplies about 11% of the gas needs to Fairbanks. This would be a private business that could compete for that market, and they have been trying to work their way in. When this originally started, they were looking at the governor's proposal to bring gas down from the North Slope. They felt they could do this much more inexpensively under their own cost without it in cash infusion from the state. They could get at the same numbers. That project has dropped out, and now we're hearing about the FNG possibility that the state is looking at.
Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, where is Westpac Midstream headquartered?
Texas. Okay. They are, I think, a $90 billion conglomerate. So this is a small project. They have 9 ongoing projects throughout the United States right now, and they're out seeking good opportunities.
As follow-up, so construction, if all things go well, they'd be ready to start this summer. When would LNG delivery begin to occur in Fairbanks with all the buildup of the infrastructure required?
to get it to the city gate. They would deliver it to the city gate. That would be 2 years. Now, there's going to be a question because Fairbanks is going to have to build their infrastructure to accept the LNG. There's going to be a conversion process for many of the potential customers that they have.
Just to be fair, it's unfair to ask Mr. Moosey to ask to answer questions about Westpac's plans. They can answer them somewhat generally, but there are a lot of things that have to happen. And just to be clear, Fairbanks LNG is currently meeting 100% of Fairbanks' current needs. We're talking about a potential build-out in the future. So that's kind of an important point.
That is correct, yes.
There's some work to do.
The current needs, if I could say, less than 20% of the population.
Right.
That would be more fair.
Sure. We would all love to see a build-out and some increased deliverability. Mm-hmm. Other questions?
From this slide, the port is pointing out to the east. So the lease site is just going to be north between Don Young and Liu Young Road, which is the two roads that you see there. They are looking at approximately total 100 acres in that area for the project. This is an interesting slide because we have an existing port, we have abundant land, but you can kind of see the layout of the current gas lines and how Port McKenzie kind of fits in with the current infrastructure already there. The Westpac project is just one of the projects, LNG projects, that we're working on. We'll talk about the second one here in a moment, but if Westpac occurs, which we're pretty optimistic that they will, they will be a great tenant for us. But they won't be the only tenant. We're looking at this as a total resource port. We have larger LNG option. We'll talk about a little later. So we're starting to see, because of this infrastructure being done, I think we've been a decade and a half into Port McKenzie. We've been 8 years on the rail. The work that was done well before me is starting to come through fruition. We're starting to see we're actually building infrastructure for private business. This is the Hillcorp or ADA project, or maybe just the FNG project, owned by Pentex. This project, although we are not working with this, they have not contacted work with my office on this, is north of Port McKenzie, but is just a half mile from this rail project. So if this were to go forward or if it to expand, the rail line we're talking to would also play an impact on this.
Just, I think you can add a third name called Blue Crest to that slide.
Yeah, yes.
For competing interest in the FNG facility.
And that's a good point, Mr. Chair. Blue Crest, they announced a month ago, has an agreement with Westpac to sell them the gas, the natural gas. They bought some assets from Buccaneer. I think everybody's familiar with Buccaneer, not Blue Crest, about a year ago. And so they are a new investor in the Cook Inlet opportunities. Central Alaska Energy, this is a fuel tank we talked about last year, 7 million gallon tank farm. This is also to really take advantage when fuel prices were really high just 6 months ago, to bring in lower cost fuel, mostly low sulfur diesel fuel that will be at Port McKenzie. We're hoping it'll break ground in 2015. This is also an ADA project that was approved, I believe, a year and a half ago for financing. We have some fancy video here to kind of show a rail loop. This is a 110-car rail loop over a mile in length at the point. It provides really great staging for bulk resources, such as gravel, coal, timber. Exports, we expect exports to Asia. And just last month, there has been a memorandum of understanding with the governor and Resource Energy, Inc. We have been working with REI for the past year and a half. They will be just south of the south of Port McKenzie, straddling our project. And so we think a resource development, the REI project, and the Westpac project can all coexist. First phase of REI, and it's a scalable project, is for using Cook Inlet gas, and our market is Japan. They also are in position that when the state gas line, is available, that's when they could scale up to their full size, also having the same market for Japan. So they do not have the supply yet, but they certainly have the market. Westpac has a supply, and they're seeking the market.
Just to clarify, you stated that they don't have the supply, but they do have the market. Which market is that?
Japanese market.
Does REI have any currently operating facilities on the planet?
No, they do not.
Oh, I was just curious. Yeah. And Westpac has the experience in the operating facilities, but...
Yeah, their market, they're looking for the interior of Alaska. And then secondly, for the second phase, they're looking at using the ISO container concept for bush communities via water.
Okay, coastal deliveries.
Yes.
LNG, gotcha. Thank you.
We talked a little bit before about the Project Cargo Port. The Fury pipeline was one example of that. Imports, we think we can get construction materials easier and less expensive to the interior from this part. As you can see, right up the rail belt, so to Fairbanks. So this 34-mile project is, I think, is key. It gets from Fairbanks on the rail all the way to Tidewater. And the Alaska Rail has been a good project partner on this. Westpac. Now, not to be confused with Westpac Midstream, this is Westpac Logistics. No relationship other than they pretty much like a similar name. This is our local partner, King Hufford, Alaska gentleman, who really provides logistics for us. They did the Fury project, and I alluded to before. We're trying to keep our overhead down as opposed to the borough hiring a large staff to do this. They have been our partner, and they will come in and be very competitive on their prices to get projects where they need to go, something we don't even have to worry about. This is the importance of the rail getting out to the port. You can see on this map all the potential and current mines and mining opportunities right along the rail belt that we have, all the way up to Livengood, which... could have big opportunities in the future for concrete. These are our partners that have signed letters of interest or support. At the same time, we have companies lining up now that once this rail is complete, we'll be ready to use. I've been asked in the past on what contracts do we have signed to use the rail. Our problem with that is we cannot legitimately tell them when we will have rail service beginning. Joe Perkins is here to kind of explain where we are on this rail construction project. And so, Joe?
Thank you, John. I'm Joe Perkins, the project director for Metsu Borough for this project. Pardon my voice today. I've lost part of it. But... when we started this project, we broke this project into basically six construction segments of embankment, and then a seventh segment, which includes placing material on the blank on the embankment, which basically is D1 and leveling it up, and then the segment eight is basically putting in ties and rail and finishing the job. Now, of the six segments that run start down at the loop and run all the way up to the highway, let me give you a little bit of a status of them. Segment one, which includes basically all the land down to the down to the loop is completed as far as embankment's concerned. It's too bad we don't have the slides because they're quite, they're 60 and 70 and 80 foot fills were required to finish that, but it's done and it's ready for the segment 7 and segment 8 actual rail work. Segment 2 runs through the farm district, and of course, as most of you know, the farm district right away is regulated a little bit differently, and that there are covenants that have been signed with all of the land that you can't do this and you can't do that. And so what we have done is we have purchased all of the land in segment 2 that we need for the railroad, and we are in the process now of condemning by Matsu Burl the covenants. And in that condemnation action, it will be against the state, and we have talked to the state, and it's something that that is ongoing. And I would hope that we will have all of the segment 2 land available to us in probably 4 or 5 months. Segment 3, which starts on right outside of the farm district and heads on up all the way up to those of you who know anything about that country, to Papoose Twins. And I thought I knew every road in the state, but I did not know Papoose Twins until this job. But it runs up to Papoose Twins. All the embankment is in. It's finished. So segment 3 is finished. Segment 4 is under construction right now and will be completed next year, all of the embankment. Segment 5, we have the funding for. We are working with the right-of-way. That right-of-way is owned by Kinnekotnu, and we are currently negotiating with Kinnekotnu as to procuring that land from them. If negotiations are not successful, it is our intent to condemn Segment 5, the Kinnekotnu portion. Segment 6 is the blue portion there at the top of your map, and what that basically is two new sidings along the main line. It's the tie-in to the main line. It's a Y, so we can turn trains in any direction. And it also included a new bridge across the Little Susitna River. That is 100% complete to include all of the ballast, ties, and track. And the railroad is currently using that land. In addition to that, there is a communications tower required there, and the communication tower is up and completed. So that sort of gives you an idea of where we stand segment-wise. This whole thing, about 30 miles long, it is some 65% complete. Next one, John.
That was a great video of construction.
Yeah, we had a great construction video. The one thing I will mention, a railroad is not difficult to build. There's a lot of things that's pretty simple. The only problem is that we maintain at least a 1% grade, which means where in a road can dip down in a valley, we're having to fill them. So a railroad in the long run is tougher to build than a road if you're in country that has hills and so on, and you can only take a look at the lower 48 of the people that built this rail across this country and across those mountains and wonder how in the world they ever did it. But that is the big difference, and I think there was a question on rail and road previously. But anyway, I'm sorry that we don't have these slides, but let's go on from there. During 2013 and 2014, we had somewhere around 200 direct hires. Now, these are only people that were driving dozers and operating equipment. And by the way, there's 5 bridges on the job, so they were also working on the bridges. All of the bridges are currently under contract. There are no bridges in segment 2 and 5, which are the two segments that we have not done the embankment. We We have been appropriated $184 million in seven separate appropriations and one statewide general obligation bond. And these started in 2008, which is now, I've lost track of the years, that's about 8 years ago, we started appropriating money. And this slide shows you, this next slide, shows you how this appropriation has been made. In 2010, we did not, let's go back to that. In 2010, you'll note we didn't get any money. Other than that, we got money every year. We now need in 2016, and the completion date of this thing depends totally on money. In 2016, we figure it'll take $120 million to finish this job. This is just a summary of the segments I was talking about. 1, 3, 4, 6, and 5 are funded. 1, 3, 6 are complete. Segment 5 is not complete.
Mr. Perkins,
the funding that we're...
We have a question from Representative Clayman.
Thank you. Through the chair, are you asking for $120 million in this year's budget, or are you just saying $120 million is the ask over a period of years in the future, and if it isn't all this year, how much is the ask for this year?
To keep construction going, we need $35 million this year. And the remainder of the money that's needed is basically the purchase of ties and track and that type of material. But $35 million will allow us to complete segment 2. And the segments we have to complete, again, is segment 2. That segment 7, which again is segment 7 includes fiber optics along the whole line. It includes another communications tower down at the port. So there's some auxiliary type of things in 7. And 8, of course, is the biggie, the ties, the track, and ballast. And by the way, we are making ballast at Curry, and we've got about a third of the ballast already made.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Representative? Yes. Okay. Yes.
Mr. Perkins, the positive train control that we heard about, is some of that, when you were talking about communication towers, is that tied into some of the infrastructure needed for that, or not so, because we're not planning passengers on that section?
Through the chair to Representative Hughes, those communications towers are needed for the operation of this spur. They may later, I don't know where positive train control fits in. They may later serve some function in that. But for right now, it's for those two. And it joins the total communication systems of Alaska Railroad.
Thank you. And I figured that you would need to have that kind of infrastructure anyway. I just was wondering if there was any planning ahead that at some point it may need to house anything, and I don't know enough about the positive train control infrastructure, but so it's good. At this point, we know that it is not addressing that, so thank you.
Yeah. These pictures are pictures of segment 6. I said segment 6 is done, complete, and the Alaska Railroad is actually backing trains all the way up to Miller's Road. And that's the end of segment 6. But that whole thing is usable. The picture at top left gives you some idea of the track ties and ballast I was talking about, which were in segment 8 funding. That's my presentation for now, and we appreciate it. The completion date, again, I might mention, is dependent on funding. And if we were to get $35 million this year and the remainder of it next year, I think we're probably looking for a late 2018 opening of this rail. If it's piecemealed and continue to be piecemealed, then it is going to stretch out. The estimate that we have, the cost estimate, as far as I'm concerned, we've spent a lot of time looking at it, is good. Again, if we can complete by 2018, if we stretch out, then it will surely add money to the project. And again, thank you for allowing me to make this presentation.
Yeah, we very much appreciate that. You have invested $184 million into this project, and we are very, very grateful. We think we have been wise in putting this project together. We see this as another infrastructure project that will help really create another economic segment that will lessen our dependence on oil just a little bit. And so thank you very much for partnering with us. We know how much we're really asking for in this tight budget opportunity or lack of revenue opportunity that you have for the state. But this is one project that will add jobs and add economic opportunities to Alaska and Mat-Su Borough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moosey. And Mr. Perkins, any final questions? Yes.
Sorry.
Representative Steeds.
Well, I couldn't say. How much money has your municipality put into this project, if any?
It has been less than 10%. We have quite investment staff time. We have doing the segments, you know, all the gravel, or a good majority of gravel came as a donation from the borough. But as far as cash in hand to do contracts, that has come strictly through these grant appropriations from the state.
Okay. Well, so there's been no bonding or anything from your municipality, Jim?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Hughes.
I'll just make a comment, and thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation. Just point out that although you would expect jobs maybe associated right in the port area, the folks probably to live in the Mat-Su or South Central Anchorage area, that it is a state project, really, truly, because it's connecting to the rail system to take things up into the interior, and hopefully someday to get to be a route to get things even on out to the very rural communities. So just want to put on the record that it is not just a regional project, it's a state project. So appreciate the work that you're doing. And I did have kind of a little question clarification, because, you know, this is a railroad project, and we've got the Alaska Railroad here, but you're managing it, but you are working in conjunction with the railroad as far as is so that it will tie in and everything. And then at some point, does it get transferred over to the railroad, or will the borough continue to maintain it, or how will that work once it's finished?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we are working very, very closely with the railroad. They have a project manager also, and him and I meet almost every, well, we hold a meeting every 2 weeks on this project. And so it's been a very, very close relationship. At the end of this project, when we get all of the land completely squared away, the land required to operate this railroad will be transferred to the railroad. In some cases, we've had to buy uneconomical remnants and so on. Those will remain with Mat-Su Borough. But everything that's needed to operate the railroad, to include a terminal reserve where they can park trains, fuel trains, change crews, and all of this, and that'll be in the farm district, and it'll be some 600 to 700 feet wide, and they can put as many tracks in there as they want, so that they can stage cars. So we're looking to the future of this thing becoming a major, major thoroughfare for the movement of goods north from the port.
Other questions? I want to thank you both for being here. I wouldn't, this is a tough year, as you both know. I wouldn't take this year as a gauge of support or the lack thereof for your project, but certainly appreciate all the information you had for us today. I'm going to hand you the gavel to close out the meeting, but what I do want to say is I do believe in these joint committee meetings. I think they're an efficient use of time and staff and energy, mm-hmm. So I'll look forward to more in the future, and I'm going to now pass the gavel to my co-chair Hughes here.
Thank you, my co-chair. Senator Machicki, you did a great job chairing the meeting. And I just want to let my House members know that we will be back in room 17 on Thursday at the regular time. And then also to give everyone in the room a heads up and a welcome and an invitation, a week from tomorrow we're going to have a lunch and learn on the unmanned aircraft systems industry in Alaska. And the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration will be presenting along with a couple of industry folks who serve on the legislative task force on that same topic, which will meet immediately following the lunch and learn. So just want to give people a heads up. For those that are new, you might want to get up to speed on what are the work that we've been doing. So I just want to welcome people and let you know that's in a week. So with that, it is now I can't quite see
250.
It's 2:51, and I will adjourn the meeting.